When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
This episode is sponsored by Try Vegan, a vegan meal home delivery service that is nutritious and delicious and makes your life easier. Based out of New Jersey, they deliver throughout the Northeast. Check out more details on their website, tryveganmealprep.com. And you can get 25% off your first order with the promo code LITYOGA. So go vegan. Good movement, and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a Lit Yoga podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter and safer movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Okay, welcome the yoga couple. The yoga couple.
Thank
Matt and
you.
Ash, I'm so glad to have you on here.
Excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's get started with the yoga couple. That is, that's quite the title. Like, how did you come up with that?
So our whole thing with the name, it's so funny because back in the day, you know, Instagram used to be like a totally different place, you know, and we tried to pick a name that we felt like represent us and our totality and our wholeness. And at one point we were totally doing like all the cool handstand poses and all of the asana and all the things and showing off all the cool travel photos. But it really evolved into, it's a beautiful process because it really evolved into encompassing what we feel is the, you know, the wholeness of the practice. It's the foundation of our relationship, being rooted in self-awareness and self-reflection. And, you know, we ended up writing a book together, The Inner Work, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but really the inward practice of yoga became the roots and the foundation of our lives and in our relationship. And I think the reason why we're still married. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think definitely, it's pretty fitting because, you know, we've bounced around a lot of other ideas, but yoga really does perfectly encompass kind of what our entire relationship is based on, is a foundation. You know, kind of, it's funny when we met and we talked about what is our top priorities in life. It's like, to us, it's self-realization and enlightenment, mm-hmm. which is the whole path of yoga. So I think the yoga couple is pretty fitting, seeing how that is like literally what we eat, sleep, and breathe.
But it's funny because we don't really have any documentation of us doing any physical yoga poses.
So we're a lot less asana based at this point, but yeah.
So how did you meet? Did you meet in a yoga setting?
So actually,
sort of, I guess.
Yeah, I actually found Matt accidentally, or we'll say like spontaneously. I found his blog, and his blog, I was actually looking up a yoga retreat center, and I wanted to go have this like alone time for processing my life. And I was looking up a center to go visit. And in that research, I was searching like White Lotus Retreat Center because I wanted to go to this very specific place in Santa Barbara. And I couldn't remember the name, and I'm searching all these terms, and I stumble upon Matt's blog. And his blog was all about, you know, this
yoga
whole thing, self-reflection, self-realization, inner work, and, you know, committing to a spiritual lifestyle and the benefits of that. And I just totally dove into his writing and actually thought he was like an old man, the way he writes. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Maybe I found my teacher. I should go take a workshop from this teacher, right? So I'm looking him up, and on the Google search, it's like all these pictures of this handsome, like 20 something year old. I'm like, there's no way that this is this guy, right? Like he should be out like being a playboy, and he's here writing about these topics. And I found him that way. And I kind of Facebook stalked him. We didn't have all the social media channels back then. This was like 8 years ago. And so I found him on Facebook, you know, the dinosaur social media. And I added him as a friend because like he didn't have Instagram or anything like this. And we started talking in messages and started talking about things that matter. We started talking about what do we think the purpose of our life is? And, you know, what's the whole human experience about? And we just, you know, I told him I was a fan of his writing, and it unfolded into a romance.
Mm-hmm. What she's leaving out is she had a boyfriend at the time.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, we were just...
Minor detail.
Yeah. Long story short on it is we were just talking about yoga philosophy and our passion for the practice and things like that at first. And then eventually, you know, I started like falling for her, and I said, okay, well, we're at a point where I really want to, you know, pursue this relationship to another level more than just enjoying our passion for yoga together as friends. But instead, you know, like what's going on with your relationship? And long story short, you know, she really meditated on it and pondered it and realized that she wanted a more spirit. She had been searching for a more spiritually aligned relationship. And again, long story short, she left her boyfriend. We started a whole new life together. I moved to Vegas where she was living. And within like a month, we were living together. And
okay,
getting
I was
ready
like
to
23, 24
open,
years old. Like.
Studio.
You know, it was
that's wonderful. That's a hopeless romantic. I love it. I love it. That's wonderful. You like went, I mean, cause again, like what's to lose, right? You just end up maybe not like, you know, not working out or something, but there's so much to gain. And clearly you have then created this amazing universe for yourself.
Yeah. We knew. We definitely knew.
We knew right away. Yeah.
We knew.
Sure.
It was uncanny. It was like, I remember when we started writing each other, it was a trippy feeling because it felt like we were reading our own journal, like the way we write, the way, and that's why, you know, I think we went on to write, we write together, because it is really trippy. Like it feels like, like that's the only way to word it is. It's like a mirror. We're reading our own, you know, stuff in a sense. And so it was really trippy, but it all worked out. Yeah. It's been beautiful.
That's wonderful. Can you talk a little bit about your individual backgrounds? What led you into this? Like you were just saying, Ash, this kind of search for more of a spiritual relationship, and not just with yourself, but with others. What was your background like growing up because that was pretty young to start searching for that. A lot of times people in their entire 20s start to realize like there is something more, but it doesn't usually happen as young as it was. Was there anything that propelled you in that direction?
Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up in Las Vegas, and that alone, like that city
alone
has so much, you know, meaning for me. It really is in an extreme sense reveals like all of the spectrum of the human experience, right? Like we can fully see in Las Vegas that there's this, desire, you know, in our human nature to want to explore that more rebellious darkness, like experimentation with desire, right? And so I grew up all around that, strip clubs, nightclubs, like, you know, sex, drugs, money everywhere. Like my parents worked, you know, my mom worked on the strip, and I did too eventually when I became of age. And I was just totally incubated in like what I feel is like, I don't know. Now I look back and it's like a Kali energy to me, like the, you know, the mother goddess teaching me through darkness and like putting it right in my face. And because of being in that, I realized pretty quickly, like, maybe this isn't what I want. It's so extreme and there has to be something else, because I didn't really get to see, you know, anything else growing up in Las Vegas. But the second part of that is that my mom, you know, she was addicted to narcotics since I was a young girl, and, you know, my alcoholism and with my dad, and they were fully embracing like substance use, like my whole life. And I had some very scary experiences growing up, you know, being home alone with my mom while she was on drugs. And it woke me up and inspired me, you know, when I was a teenager to want to find something, spirituality, religion. I didn't grow up with religion. And I started searching. I literally, when I got my driver's license, this is so, I think, a unique thing, but I wrote down all of my questions about life and God. And, you know, my parents didn't have those answers for me. And I'm here in Las Vegas growing up in this, you know, household with, you know, addiction in it. And so I went and I interviewed all these different religions and all of these churches. And I set on this like little journey within my own city to get my questions answered. And at that time I found Jivamukti Yoga. And I went into the studio and it was bhakti and we were singing and chanting and we did the breath work and the yoga. And I laid in Shavasana and I just, my heart exploded. I broke down and cried. I think I was like 16 or 17 years old. And it was like one of the most profound experiences. And I felt love. I felt love of the divine, like at that age. And I never looked back. I just went full in. I found like the Hare Krishnas. I found the Bhagavad Gita. I just dove into it. I loved it so much. And I knew that, you know, I could create a life that was different than the narrative of my family and like my lineage of, you know, abuse and all the stuff that my family has experienced generation after generation, if I went a different path. And so that's kind of what happened for me, is I knew like, I want to go this different path. And so I was really seeking a partner or even friendship that was somebody who could be on that journey with me. And that's where Matt came in.
Wow. That's beautiful. And what it really, really illustrates is the craving we have for meaning and for stability, you know? I mean, that essence of really feeling grounded and you know, in many different ways it's expressed in those early childhood years, but that you went seeking it and you knew like at an intuitive level that that's what would make you feel more whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not searching in the form of, you know, drugs or alcohol or some other forms. Yeah.
Totally. And I saw where that led. Like I saw the consequences of that before even I got to experiment with it. Mm-hmm. And I think honestly, that's what saved me from it, because I was able to witness the consequences from an outsider's perspective, really obviously, you know, whereas Matt, you'll hear, has a completely opposite experience of growing up and, you know, experimented in a completely different way because of, you know, being sheltered and having this other experience.
Yeah. I was just going to second that. One of the biggest things I really appreciate from Ash's journey, because our upbringings are literally entirely opposite. I love that gift of discernment she had, because I definitely didn't. So it's something I admire in her, that she got to see, you know, being in such a peculiar place growing up, she got to see the really negative outcomes to those karmic choices. And it's awesome that she took that wisdom and discernment and then made positive choices with it rather than destructive. Because, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily, just because you see it, doesn't mean, you know, it's like, think of all the addicts in the world.
No,
like,
it's much more likely to repeat it, right?
Yeah,
which
know,
doesn't
exactly.
make sense, but it's that's what's wired. That's
yeah,
what
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah. Like logically, we might know, oh, this is not good for me, but it doesn't mean we stop. So I just wanted to second that. That's one of my favorite things of her journey, is I just admire that discernment that she has.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, honey.
Tell your story though.
Yeah, so let's hear about yours. So you came out, you were like,
so my
Ivy League upbringing or something.
Yeah, mine is like totally like just very stereotypical, in a very like privileged way, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was raised in a really wholesome, good family with religion and lot of like core family values, you know, like I'm an Eagle Scout, you know, like I'm a straight A student. I was raised to be a doctor. I kind of did that whole route. So I graduated high school at 15, started college early because I wanted to be a doctor. And I was like, all right, well, being a doctor is this super long route, so I'm going to get started early. So I think I had my bachelor's degree by 20. And I got it in psychology. And then I started working in inpatient psychiatry. And during that time, since I went to college so early, I mean, I couldn't even drive my first few months of college. My mom had to drop me off at college. And I was trying to do the Doogie Howser thing, you know, like I was trying to like be a doctor by like my early 20s. And anyway, so it was just funny, you know, that was my whole thing. I was just obsessed with pursuing healing. You know, I knew I wanted to help people. My dad kind of, again, that classic cliche thing of like, be a doctor or a lawyer. You know, I got that whole thing indoctrinated into me, and I resonated more with being a doctor. And so I was very like pushed into that white collar lifestyle. And along the way though, I started to not like it and it didn't really resonate with me. And then I actually did all the experimenting and rebelled like crazy and pushed back against the religion, pushed back against the family core values, became an addict in so many different ways. And it's ironic because I actually had to lose myself. Mm-hmm. And then ironically, now looking back at this, you know, I don't know, 20 year journey this has been of wandering, it's ironic because I've actually just full circle come right back to the values I was raised with. It's just, I had to have my own authentic understanding of them. You know, for example, my parents, let's say not using drugs and alcohol, like being a sober person. I had to literally go be an addict for 15 years to realize why that is important. You know, like why
it's not a good idea to do all the drugs.
Exactly. Yeah. Even though it's like my parents were like, yeah, Matt, like that's why we told you, like, don't do it, man.
And but sometimes it's in the delivery. You know what I mean?
It totally is.
Right. If it's just like, you don't do that because drugs are bad.
100%.
Like I remember my dad, who is like my hero. And I mean, he died 3 years ago, and you know, but he said to me, and I love this, he goes, drugs aren't bad. They just can make you make bad decisions. And I thought, I don't want to make bad. Like, it was just such a like, well, because there was no judgment. It was just like, this is why it might, you know, it might not be a good idea. And that was just like, oh, I don't want to make bad decisions, so I won't do that. It wasn't like, you're a bad person, right? Yeah. So anyway, go back to you.
100%, 100% the delivery, for sure. For sure. It's definitely that. And that, you know, with our healing work that we do now, that's why I'm actually always really kind of obsessed with how I deliver when I work with people, because I just know how important that is to not, the teaching itself, right? We see this in yoga all the time, is the teaching is beautiful, but how it's delivered and when it's delivered, one person's medicine can be another person's poison, because how it gets delivered could actually cause harm. When it gets delivered could cause harm, because the person's not quite ready for that. So anyway, the story goes, you know, I pursued this traditional route, becoming a doctor. And I eventually settled into, after working in inpatient psychiatry for a year, I just was fascinated by psychology. I was always kind of drawn to psychology. I was fascinated by the mind, and eventually I chose naturopathic medicine because it resonated the most with me, of like true healing. And within my first year in naturopathic medicine, I learned more about the placebo effect, the idea that you can give a human literally nothing and their body will have a response. Well, that fascinated me, that you can give someone a pill that has no physiological effect, but they will spontaneously heal from it like a third of the time. So that to me was just like game over. Because I was obviously obsessed. I already had a knack for studying the mind. So I was like, oh, I got to study that. So then I left medical, the naturopathic school, because it was too, I just realized I have a special interest here. So I instead went to a therapy program to focus just purely on the mind. And so I went into a Jungian, you know, Carl Jung based therapy program to be a therapist. But then within that first year, same stuff. I just realized, well, this isn't taking into consideration like consciousness and spirit. And we need to talk about that. And there needs to be a spiritual context. So then I left again. And then I found my teacher who was more yoga enlightenment based. And that was able to finally, you know, I found my actual real healing path, which was how to incorporate all of these worlds, you know, body, mind, and spirit, to truly help people heal, to alleviate human suffering. And that's kind of where I found yoga, is through the path of trying to be the ultimate healer. And I realized yoga kind of has it all, because they talk about
realms. Check. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I know. It is. And so much, it's so hard to have that like in a 2-minute elevator speech. You know, but it's like, just trust me, you gotta experience it. So what do you do now with that? It sounds like you guys do a lot. You do some work together, this inner work. you do that as with other couples and then do you work with individuals as well? Tell me a little bit about your work. Is it all collaborative or do you do some work independent of each other?
Yeah, a little bit of both. We work together and we work individual. And I guess the what sums up what we do is we help people to self-heal. It's all about people realizing that they have the power to be their own healers. And whether that's as an individual or within their relationship, or whether it's healing, you know, trauma and conditioning and programming of, you know, self-sabotaging personality traits, or it's healing a physical ailment, it's the system of inner work is what we, you know, coined it as, is it works on all the planes, like Matt was saying, body, mind, and spirit. And it works as an individual, and it's required and useful for us to have healthy relationships, for us to all be doing our inner work. And so that's really what the basis of everything that we do is teaching people or guiding people on how to self-heal and how to do their inner work so that they can have the results that they're looking for. And oftentimes are kind of getting exhausted in the systems that we're so accustomed to, you know, like going to therapy for 10 years and not seeing progress, or getting put on medication. When people are exhausted and not seeing the results that they want, they start to look for these alternative healing solutions. And that's kind of where people find us, is it's like these things that might've been considered more woo-woo, you know, like
doing
these visualization processes and going back into our childhood and then doing mantra and breath work. And it's like things you might not have been right away open to until you've exhausted every other route. And then they have these profound shifts. So we have, you know, these yoga classes and experiences that aren't really like the yoga that people are accustomed to seeing as like a workout, but more so for this, for to heal. Like our classes are really designed to like heal an inner child wound, or like face rejection or shame. And the whole experience of asana, breath work, meditation is a journey for you to process something and to come out of it with a result. And we use a lot of Kundalini Kriyas and stuff, but Matt also does counseling. So he works with people one-on-one. He has clients all over the world and, you know, usually does like a 3-month, what he calls his hero's journey with them, where he guides them through this self-healing hero's journey.
Yeah. Exactly. I love it.
My opinion, the healing journey is definitely a hero's journey.
It is a hero's journey.
There's so many shadows we have to face.
Yeah. We also have the book though, like when people can't like get in contact with us, like that's why we wrote the book. The Inner Work book is like, it's like a manual for you to do this yourself.
I love that. Oh, I love that. So for those who are not familiar with it, but are going to perhaps get it now, what are some of the first stages that you take people through in this journey as individuals or in like a group setting? In a yoga class or wherever it might be, what are some of the first things? Like I know at a macro level, all the way down to micro level, to me it's pretty obvious. It's got to be observing, right? Like once you unveil something, whether it's behavior, self-destructive, whether it's repetitive cycles, whether it's some relationship, like once it's revealed, it's really hard to not do something about it. People still do, but as it becomes, at some point it becomes no longer like irrevocably, you know, you've got to go in a different direction. Is that one of the first stages you would say is that like starting to observe?
100%. Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is whenever I start, for example, with the hero's journey experience, first and foremost, we're always starting out by understanding that the mind is running on programs. So that is pivotal. We have to understand that. We have to understand that we are not our thoughts. That is like the first realization the person has to have, because so long as we don't have that realization, our ego will forever control us. So as we know in yoga, the whole path is to transcend the ego and to stop being so controlled and manipulated by it. So how are we going to do that, right? So it's like first and foremost, like you said, yes, observe, and then taking that observation to discover. So first is just to witness it, right? So like you nailed it. It's like, yeah, you have to even be able to watch your thoughts in the first place. So first is like, oh, this thing just kind of automatically does whatever it wants. And then from there we say, cool. So yeah, we all have that. We all are dealing with that. Now, the next thing is, now, do you notice a pattern? Mm-hmm. And then that's where we start to look for programs, because let's say you start listening to your thoughts. You know, we say, hey, welcome, you know, let's start this journey. You're going to just start by observing what are your patterns. And the person says, man, I notice every day I'm judgmental as heck. All I do is judge myself, judge other people, judge. Or maybe they're like, I'm frustrated. I'm always frustrated, impatient, da, da, da. We start to look for a program, and we call these themes of consciousness. And so we call it a theme because what we will notice as we observe our patterns is they are a consistent topic that just gets projected onto any topic, anything the ego sees. So it'll judge the weather. If like judgment is the person's theme, they'll judge themselves, they'll judge their partner, they'll judge the economy, they'll judge the world, they'll judge other people. It doesn't matter what the ego will use, but the theme will be consistent. So that's like the first big thing, is to help people see that there is such a thing as a program that is then projecting onto things to seek validation for itself. So first and foremost is like trying to understand how the mind works and how it does this, and that it's not their fault. It's conditioning. We all get conditioned.
Yeah. And then after that conditioning process, I found in like a lot of the yoga and maybe even like Buddhist ways of going through this process of self-discovery, it's like, okay, now you see that, now just let it go. I think what makes us different is that we really allow people to be in the wound, and we're like, it's okay for you to be there and to have anger or to feel pain. And we don't need to just detach from it and let it go once we're aware of it. You can be with that for a while and you can process it and you can ask all those, you know, questions you have of like, well, why am I like this? Right? Like what we notice is people want to get to the root. They want to know where did this come from? Where did I learn that? Why am I like this? It's very hard for the ego to just detach and let go. If we were able to detach and let go, we'd be enlightened, right? Like that right. It sounds so easy to
we'd all be happy all the time, right?
Yeah. So it's like we really encourage people to actually be wherever they are in the journey and stop demonizing these lower quote unquote emotions or these lower frequencies. Like anger isn't wrong, you know, judgment and guilt that you carry, that's not wrong.
Yeah. It has a very healthy time and place, actually. So that, I think that definitely is something that's very unique, is we want people to understand that there is all these things that we as a collective like healing community kind of brush off as, oh, these are negative, we need to fix these. We actually take the stance of, well, actually it's there for a reason. It's trying to help you, and it's okay that it's there. Cause a lot of times there's a lot of guilt around having lower I'm trying to get better at saying this more frequently. They're just unpleasant. It's not that they're negative, because negative in our brain can get turned into a judgment. So
very,
it's like
binary.
They're just unpleasant. They're just uncomfortable. So let's just call them uncomfortable emotions. When we have these unpleasant emotions, they're totally there for a reason, though. They have a message. They have a healthy time and place. And I think that's what's really interesting.
And when we allow people to be in that experience of looking at that, and they start to find out, oh, well, this was passed down to me, and you know what, my mom and my dad, and they were behaving this way, and then I think I developed this as a coping mechanism, and oh, and then the whole thing, the dots are connecting. When we just allow people to be in that journey, that's that self-healing journey, because it naturally falls away. Like you naturally let it go because you've made peace with it. And so like the themes of consciousness, we kind of have them mapped out like a hero's journey, right? Like a map that you go like through the valley of your shadow and you face all your demons. And then you kind of like get some courage and you start hiking up the mountain and you have all these epiphanies. And then you kind of like go down and descend into the bliss. And we really encourage people to just be on that journey and be wherever you are. And that self-inquiry process of wanting to connect the dots is helpful. It's great. It's necessary. And so all the work that we do is like guiding people on that journey of, it's kind of like getting to know themselves, you know, for the first time.
Now, I know there's probably a lot of different wounds or conditioning, but has there in the last 4 to 5 years become a very more common one that you see consistently with people?
That's a good loaded question. Let's see if we don't get in hot water on this one. We have some pretty, for we have some pretty strong stances on a couple big topics that we see in the world that are a big problem. So for any of those who know us or follow us, or are going to be, you will notice we're a big advocate about one big topic for sure that I'll bring up. And that is the dangers of desire and specifically instant gratification and pornography. And
substance use
and alcohol. So this is one of the biggest things that we see as a big red flag. And what I'm constantly counseling through every relationship I ever work with, this is causing an issue.
Yeah.
Every individual person's journey, especially men, it's causing an issue. And it's like, we gotta work through it.
I'm really glad you're bringing this up, because I had an instinct that just like all journey through time, there's got to be something that the world is really circulating in right now that is that needs to be, you know, people like you need to help with the healing. And it's when it becomes like happening at such a frequency, isn't the word, but consistent noise of it, we like almost don't pay attention. But I'm sure the damage is there and it's obvious. So I had a feeling. So you would say the addiction for men, for instance, in pornography has really exploded in the last 5 years.
Yeah, maybe 10.
Since the internet started to get better and better. So yeah, definitely the last decade, it is the real epidemic that is like blasting through relationships and every healthy self-esteem out there.
And the porn use, we would say, and you know, alcohol use or any substance use is really just the action. It's like the side effect of this theme of consciousness, right? It's like we're looking at like consciousness and then we're saying, well, what does this theme of consciousness desire? What does it talk like? What does it choose as an action? How does it behave? And what we're seeing is like as a collective, we're getting really accustomed to instant gratification and like self-serving, and we want only pleasure all of the time. And there's this really push back against anything that takes effort
and discipline,
anything that takes discipline, anything that takes work, like our relationships, right? They take a lot of work. Yeah. And
people
when we're
working, you know, I mean, like just like a basic job, like showing up and doing a really good job and actually looking for things to do versus, yeah. Yeah.
I think
Exactly.
Yeah. That's showing up everywhere. Yeah.
Everywhere.
It leads into everything.
It's a big thing we're seeing.
And then the weird thing for us being, you know, in the yoga community and kind of like that spiritual alternative community is we're seeing it even blend into that and like maybe new age spirituality and like the self-love movement and get really confused between true self-love, which we would feel is cultivating this acceptance of equal parts effort, right? And equal parts surrender that we see in the yoga, but it's completely just throwing it all out the door and calling everything self-love. Self-love is having
no discipline. Gosh, everybody should just hallelujah to this, because I think we almost have to like just scrap everything and start over and just start with the premise, life is hard.
Thank you.
We're going to, right? Like just we're going to have lots of joy.
Okay.
But life is hard, and that's a great thing, right? Because if it wasn't, how would we even discern when something is easy and wonderful and fluid and relationship you've worked toward? There would be no reward, zero. Everything comes your way. That's why people that are born wealthy are often the most miserable. They've never had to work or worry or effort. And we need to work. We need to struggle. We need to fall on our knees, you know? And yeah, I've met my people.
Love it.
I know.
Preach. That's awesome. Yeah, that is our
aversion to that. There's
such an aversion. And it's so great to hear your passion for it too, because we just constantly are getting pushback, and it's great to come across someone else who just totally gets it. And because we're constantly, our work, honestly, we're often on this topic, we're always saying, look, you need to get good at facing discomfort. It's just, if you want to truly be on the yoga path, get ready to be uncomfortable and get good at sitting in that uncomfort. Like sit in it and just be in it.
That means like your relationship has issues.
It
doesn't just mean like...
It means your job is tough. It means your discipline is tough. It means you got to take care of your health, and eating healthy takes effort. And like, you name it, right? Every category of life, it's like discipline face the discomfort. And we're
you're my person. So, like, I said, discipline is the best word ever. Discipline gives you freedom.
Exactly. Yes,
our saying we always say is discipline is the highest form of freedom.
Yes.
Because if we can't discipline ourselves, then we are completely controlled and manipulated by to and fro. All you got to do is dangle a carrot of desire in front of someone and they will just abandon whatever they, you know, and it's brutal. And it's showing up in so many categories of life that this is definitely the biggest topic for sure.
So it's not to cast judgment. It's just to bring awareness
that
the fruits of that are never going to be the fruits that we actually want.
We want
this satisfying relationship. We want success. We want to have peace in our lives. And it's been proven through time and history that this aversion to discomfort is never going to bring those fruits.
Yeah,
and that's all.
Timeless
it's like,
issue.
If you know that and you want to just keep pleasure chasing, that's fine. Just know the fruits it's going to bring. And so, we see this coming out in these epidemics, like not wanting to work anymore, not wanting to have a long-term relationship. Just it's hard, move on, find somebody else, go on Tinder and swipe, right? It's like not putting in the work to create that life. You know, with the porn epidemic or the substance use, it's like everything should just be right there at my fingertips to please and serve me. And this pattern and habit and theme of consciousness is creating havoc in people's lives, and they're not making the connection
that
you're using porn every day or you're drinking every day or smoking marijuana every single day, avoiding all this discomfort. And that's why you're not happy. They can't usually see that. They don't connect. They're like, that has nothing to do with, you know, my relationship.
They're like,
problem.
No, it's actually you. You're the one that's pissing me off. It's like, no, dude, you're irritable because you just looked at porn yesterday or this morning
and you can't
and
handle
now your brain's withdrawing.
A single disturbance from pleasure.
And I think then, you know, the layers go beyond, because I think when you're living in that kind of half awake state, the choices you make, if you're able to, I mean, again, it's not a judgment, but it becomes easier and easier to be less moral. And I don't mean that from a Christian standpoint. I mean, just from being a human that wants to do the best, cause the least suffering. I think that we're really, you know, that's I think the thing that the work does is it's hard to look deep within yourself. It's hard to look at the world and see how choices that you've made are contributing to suffering. You know, because I'm vegan and been a vegan for 20 years, and I'm like, it was the easiest choice you can only make. You only make it hard because of, you know, all the things you're thinking you're missing out on. But what it becomes beautiful and immediately is the hypocrisy is lifted. You're really like, you know, very as clear as possible if you're living in that alignment, if, you know, like for me. So I think when people, I'm sure, like when they're in pornography and all that, they are just not, they're not in, on a channel that is clear and aware of the choices they're making in so many other realms.
Yeah, it's definitely systemic for sure. So that's definitely why we love this approach of trying to help people see there's a theme to it. And this is definitely the theme that we're seeing the most, is just this avoidance to seeing that chasing our pleasures, whatever it is, it brings suffering. And that's the whole path of yoga, right? It's like the whole path of yoga is to alleviate suffering, to transcend suffering, to, you know, the whole concept of enlightenment.
To be clear what you just said, Laura, to be self-aware, awake on your highest frequency, to be from a place of sovereignty, to cause no harm, all these things, right? It's like, because that's our highest joy. Mm-hmm. And the world tells us that our highest joy is like on the other end of the spectrum. And it's so ironic. It's so ironic that
it is. Like what you acquire, how much you make, all those things is what is perceived to be bringing you happiness. But, you know, it's how you manage yourself, really, like how you conduct yourself and the choices you make. And are they in alignment? We just know when they're not at some level. And it might not, like you said, I'm sure that all the work you do, the shadow work and really uncovering. So tell us what, if there are people who are listening now, what is some work that you offer in a, like a group setting or virtual or in person? They are located, I'm going to have to come visit very soon. on one of my favorite places in the world, Big Island of Hawaii, like its own vortex of healing and energy. And it's just phenomenal. But tell us where people can find you and work with you, because I think you guys are just, I've just fallen in love with you. I want to come.
Yay. We love you too. Thank you. Laura, I didn't even tell you this, but I actually know so many people who have trained with you. So I was so excited to do this interview because she's such an amazing teacher. This is so cool. Like, I know so many of your students and teachers and, you know, worked with them. So it was so cool.
Oh, that's incredible. I didn't know that. Well, that's wonderful. Yeah. So you probably know I'm very, very comfortable with making people uncomfortable.
Yes.
And, you know, they'll be like, well, somebody, people are going to be confused. I'm like, let them be confused. Like, come on. People are just, you know, this is not a performance. I want them tapped in so that they're actually listening, focusing on themselves, you know? And so it's just funny because I use all that same language. We should be a little bit more comfortable with being uncomfortable because, you know, again, this is how we grow. We never grow from sitting around eating snacks. All right. We're going to grow from challenge and some struggle. And boy, that's where it's confronted. You know, this whole, well, what does it look like versus I don't look, you know, I'm like, who fucking cares? Like, be it with you and challenge you. Don't worry about anybody else in the room or in the world, as it were.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I was so glad to hear you. That. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you can find us. We're obviously the Yoga Couple. And if you go to theyogacouple.com, we have courses on couples that are working with this porn addiction without the guilt, without the shame, like how to process that and get to the root of like, why did we even start this habit? You know,
underneath all these things is a program and is usually a coping mechanism for sure. You know, to really make sure and wrap that up is like that pleasure seeking, it comes from a wound, just to be nice and like clear about it. So there's so much compassion that's important in healing that, because we don't become pleasure seeking. We're running from something, right? Like there's a wound there. So we help people through that.
Yeah.
For sure.
So we have courses on that. We have Matt's counseling on that webpage, but you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the places, just at The Yoga Couple.
Oh my gosh. You all are adorable. I love your work. And might I add, you're also, I was reading this, I have to find out about this. What is this Battle of the Fittest Couple on Paramount Network? I mean, this is a little off brand.
Yeah.
No, I love it. I love it. It's like so great when people have multifaceted things.
Yeah. You can watch us on reality TV and watch us battle for $100,000 on Paramount
Network.
Watch
the power of yoga transcend weightlifters.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. So this has been out already. We can just Google this.
Yeah. It was 2019. Yeah. So it's out on Paramount Network. You can go to the website.
I definitely want to do that. That must have been so fun. Now, that can just like, you can check that right off your list. Done reality TV.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This was really for everybody listening. Please go check them out. I can sense and I have good instincts that you are such the real deal and it would be such an honor to work with you in person or virtually. So please check out The Yoga Couple, Matt and Nat. And you guys are just adorable. So thank you so much. And for everybody that's listening, I'm pulling for you.